put together what I've got, conceptual mechanics behind 954. I think it's a little hard to decipher from the bill. And I've been working with Washington County on kind of the mechanics and the policy rationale behind that. And then we have Commissioner Bryan here to talk about that. What I did was put together just a simple example to show you what the concept is, and that's to take for an SIP project, strategic investment project, going forward, you would take the amount of employment in that project, and in my example there I have 350, and the average wage of that project assumed to be $42,500, and then to estimate the amount of personal income taxes that would be generated from that wage income alone. So if you look at the $42,500, and we have, of course, have detailed tables of that from Department of Revenue, it would be, on average, $2,333 in personal income taxes. If you take that number, that income tax increase associated with the project, multiply those two numbers together, you have $816,000. Assume a ratio, and that's in the bill, there's a shared services fund. So you take a ratio of that, assumed to be a 0.5, just for example purposes only, and you'd have an end up depositing $408,000 into a shared services fund. So the concept behind 954 is to look at the added employment and personal income taxes associated with a project and then develop a mechanism for sharing some of those revenues with the host county for the project. The bill has a number of references to withholding and requirements from Department of Revenue. My suggestion to simplify this would be to delete references to the Department of Revenue and require the Department of Economic and Community Development to certify the jobs and wages, which they do normally in the process of an SIP program. Those are all, of course, those decisions, the way the program works now, those decisions are made by the county commission. And then require those jobs and wages to be certified, and then you can apply that percentage. It's relatively straightforward. And have Department of Administrative Services, when the personal income tax dollars come over from Department of Revenue for deposit in the general fund, a portion of that could be put into the shared services fund to reflect this calculation. And then that would be returned to the county, and then the county would be responsible for sharing that with the other taxing districts.
And whose crazy idea is this?
Big guy back there.
Chair, Tom Bryan. Dennis Mulvihill. And do you want to bring up, I know, I saw that. Well, we'll do Washington County first, and then we'll do City of Hillsborough.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tom Bryan. I'm chairman of the Washington County Board of Commissioners in Hillsborough. And we first of all want to thank you for the time this morning to express our support for Senate Bill 954. As Mr. Warner pointed out, the basic concept is to have a way to share gain off of new revenue that is generated as a result of a successful SIP negotiation. We've thought about this actually for almost 6 years, and it gets increasingly evident to us that it's a good idea. Really, I think of it for three reasons. It does help incentivize local jurisdictions. It's equitable for the local jurisdictions, and it makes, in some cases, a successful negotiation feasible, possible. Technically there's been six strategic investment program agreements in Washington County. Two were with Intel in 1994, about 2 months apart, so some folks refer to those as one deal, but it was actually two. But of those, I've chaired the negotiating team for the last three, two Intel negotiations and last year with Genentech. And I can tell you it's been we're thankful for the opportunity to be in those discussions and have the opportunity to work with these companies, which we have found to be great community partners. But it's all business in that negotiation. And there's a lot of give and take and discussions. I think the 99 SIP took well over a year. And the issue of incentivizing the county, for example, the 05 SIP, there was a property tax where we would, all the local jurisdictions, it was about just under $600 million, about $568 million of property tax over 15 years that we forgave to essentially offer retention of employees. One thing I have learned and been convinced of that it's not just lip service, but we truly are in global competition. We're in competition with other states, and we are in competition with other nations, and that's been quite evident in these negotiations. The equitable portion, let me comment on that briefly, that when you sit wearing a local government hat, while we're thankful for these opportunities to keep jobs and keep our economy vibrant and also help the state, we also can't help but note that we forego property taxes, which usually then increase jobs, increase local service demand. And then the income tax goes to the state. And, for example, with Genentech, it was a great partnership between the state and the city and the county. And the state and the city put in about $6 million. It was very important to finalizing that agreement. The $6 million will be recaptured in something like 2 years to the state. Meanwhile, we forego $26 million in property tax over 15 years and have an increased service demand as a result of the new jobs. So we thought it was equitable to look at some way of adding this compensation back to the local governments, because locally, these are not always easy. Politically and so forth, we've got thousands of other businesses that often ask, why not me? And other jurisdictions. So when they see us foregoing tax to increase people, to increase traffic, to increase service demand, it gets to be, you know, that's all part of the deal, is the community perception, the actual financial issues, and how we're working with these companies to get them either to locate in Oregon, as with Genentech, or to stay, or to expand. This equitable equity issue is real. And I think not only in our case, but probably around the state, having provisions like in Senate Bill 954 actually may make these feasible, because a couple of these negotiations have been very close calls where both sides were straining to get to a midpoint, a point of agreement. It would be just that much easier to get to that point of agreement if the local jurisdiction was receiving some gain share back to help offset those costs of additional services. So it's equitable to the public, really. That's the bottom line. It isn't the government, local government, it's the public for whom it's equitable, and therefore makes it an easier conversation. So we are very supportive of Senate Bill 954. It will increase, I think, the ability of local governments to utilize this tool. It'll strengthen the tool. It'll make us stronger in the global competition, which just seems to continue to increase virtually every year. We also note that it's, it's not unprecedented. The concept is consistent with a policy under ORS 306-353, which provides that the state of Oregon shall offset 50% of any property tax expenditures it creates or expands. So it relates to it, and the concept is there, and we're asking for this application of it. So that's my principal comments, and we thank you again for this opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 954.
Thank you. Questions for Chair Tom Bryan? So the easy one, Tom, is we do this, and counties and cities and other jurisdictions throughout the state say, that was great that you did it for the strategic investment program. How about the enterprise zone, or how about and that, I think that was where it gets difficult, is drawing the line of where it's appropriate and where it might not be appropriate.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I agree, and I just think that's, you know, that's your call. That's what you're, part of what you have to do every day is making these tough decisions where lines are drawn and try something, see how it works, whether it needs to be expanded or not in the future. I think we have not used enterprise zones, and so I can't comment on whether the same factors are present that would make it rational for the enterprise zones as well as the SIPs. That would require more examination on whether that applies in the same way. Mm-hmm. But of course, with all the enterprise zones around the state, you know, I guess, you know, we'd love to have this apply retroactively, but we know, looking forward to, it's an easier conversation when you talk about revenues not yet realized, and that almost all the enterprise zones are already underway. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's a good point, but I think it's just something you'll have to weigh.
And then how do you respond that the structure of the SIP allows the county, I mean, Washington County obviously is one that I think probably has more SIPs in play right now, but it does allow property tax to, I mean, it's just capped at a certain amount, and so I believe if you looked at Genentech, they will be one of the larger property tax payers, hopefully, right, in Washington County, even with the strategic investment deal that was negotiated.
Right. Mr. Chairman, but property tax in general doesn't pay for expenses. You know, it's, I think, I don't want to misstate what our, like, if you look at our total budget, it's about 25% of our budget, property taxes. We have other revenues. So, you know, we're just out there regularly looking for a variety of assistance. And I think the connection here where you bring about, whether it's 250 or 300 jobs, 1,500 jobs, or literally thousands of jobs, it does create local service demand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, Tom, thinking about this, we're facing shortfalls in community college funding and higher ed funding down here. The state is, you know, trying to determine how deep those cuts will be, and tuitions have been going up. You know that our higher ed system is among the least funded of any state, so we have real serious revenue needs, and this proposal doesn't create any additional revenue. It just shares some of the revenue with the county where the strategic investment program is, and in essence takes it away from the state. You know, why is that a better use of finite public resources than investing in state needs?
Mm-hmm. He's on our team now. A year ago, he would have been.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, a year ago, it would have been, but why is it regional governor? Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, again, that's a good point, except I would say that this is a package. In the real estate business, we used to call it a bundle of sticks, and the state would still receive 50% new revenue for each of these SIPs that are successfully negotiated. And clearly, on the ground, in terms of police, fire, libraries, you know, the local services, there's an increased demand. And that's why the sharing of it makes sense to us. The state, if we can continue to do these once in a while and do them around the state still gets 50% increase. Now, that's for the life of the agreement, which is up to 15 years, and after that, it's 100% state. So on a long-term basis, these things will roll out over time, like the 94 SIP with Intel's closed now.
Yes, follow up.
Of course, that's assuming that it wouldn't happen without this bill.
Right.
And that may be a correct assumption, or it may not be.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Senator, that is always the question is, well, what do we have to do to make this happen?
Yeah.
Will they come here anyway? I can tell you, for example, in the negotiations with Genentech, there was a pretty fierce competition that narrowed down to Oregon and one other state. And the other state was offering a package of about $50 million of benefits, whereas ours was both state and local, about 32. That's where our quality of our schools, our environment, our working and living conditions won out, frankly. And frankly, what the state and the county and the city did in terms of conducting the business and the negotiations, they were impressed by. So that's the $64 question is, you know, do we need that SIP? I am of the belief on the global competition, when you have a company like Genentech or Intel, which is highly desirable throughout the world, whether it be Ireland or Israel or China, these folks have obligations to shareholders, and they have to look at these various options, in my view. And I'm completely convinced that at least these last, really all three, because retention, although not as exciting as new jobs, yeah, is just as important. And I am sure we would have lost jobs at some point along the way. Wouldn't be a big pull-out. These companies don't do that kind of thing. But it'd be attrition as they examine their choices.
Yeah. Just one final comment. And I'm not picking on you just because we're old friends. You did negotiate those deals without this.
Right.
And one of the reasons you said that we won, despite the fact that we were outbid in terms of the package, was the livability issues, quality of our education system, and so on. If we allow that quality to deteriorate further, we continue to underfund our higher ed system, our community colleges, we may find that we can no longer compete on a global scale, and we no longer would have that advantage of the most livable place in the world to fund your business. So that's, mm-hmm, we, this committee and this body, have to balance all of these things in making these decisions.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Monroe, yeah, that's true, because there were an amazing array of things that they consider. And they bring key staff up, and at some point the key decision makers bring their families up and look around. There's a lot of intangibles involved. But it's also, I mean, like, for example, crime rate. They looked at crime rate. Is this a safe community? Do we have parks, and do we maintain them? So a lot of it's still local. It's both. You have to have both.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So the only other question that kind of really resonates is that through the single sales, going to 100% single sales, I think one could argue that the state, by adopting that structure, has given by incenting, placing a heavy incentive on come here, grow. How would Washington County or perhaps another county respond to that argument, mm-hmm, that the single sales is our way of really foregoing revenue that would otherwise come to the state?
Mr. Chairman, my response would be single sales has been very important to these companies, and it's been very effective. Whether that means the state has given, if you look at like the numbers Mr. Warner gave as an example, that's still new revenue, even after the application of single sales. So we're still looking at substantial new income tax revenue from these successful SIPs.
Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Generally supportive of this concept. I think it's obviously Washington County and Oregon, I think, has benefited from the SIP overall. But as you look at, particularly when you have a new SIP, not one where you're renegotiating basically the retention piece, but doesn't the county benefit significantly when a company comes in and, you know, you got bare ground today where Genentech is going to grow? Doesn't the local governments generally benefit by a significant margin when you turn bare ground into a multi-million dollar facility, even with the $100 million cap?
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me that in light of how that all that economics work, that it's still in the local government's best interest to bring in a facility like a Genentech or like an Intel, especially when you're talking about turning bare ground into hundreds of millions of dollars worth of investment.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, clearly there is that benefit. Again, property tax still only covers a portion of operating costs, and we can provide you more information about that. I don't think any of the jurisdictions have done these have netted money over expense. I don't think we have, but we could double check those numbers in terms of property tax generated versus the array of local expense. And secondly, I think things continue to change. Obviously we've been able to negotiate these to a satisfactory point, but I can tell you it's getting more difficult. And I also think of around the state. We've got a lot of experience negotiating these. We have a variety of assets to bring to bear. That's not true around the state, and I think the margins in other places where the values aren't as high, the land values, even the value of a completed building, because it doesn't generate the lease, the rents value, I think they're even in a tighter formula. So I think this bill opens up some opportunities statewide.
Thanks.
It is, since we put you through your paces, it is important to note that this state's revenue picture would be dramatically different right now without the SIPs that you've negotiated and that have been negotiated in Washington County. And
right.
But we have our challenges. Boy, they would be much greater had it not been for some of those SIPs that were negotiated in the 90s and just recently.
Right. Mr. Chairman, thank you. We appreciate, like I said, we do appreciate the opportunity to be in the play and to try to make it happen. But it's a huge team, local governments and special service districts and staff that make these things happen. And the nice part is you take an Intel, last number I saw was they buy and sell a variety of components and services from like 300 other Oregon companies all around the state, up and down the valley and around the state. And even, you know, in Washington. So these have been very, the 1993 legislature designed these things to create, you know, magnet companies that would be substantial attractors. And there's just no question. I mean, in fact, we just are citing SolarWorld is also coming to Washington County. That is not an SIP. In fact, we had very little to do with it. They looked around, and they're in Germany. They're the world's largest, most advanced manufacturer of photovoltaic cells, solar cells. But they came here. Part of the reason was, A, the state single tax. B, what they heard, saw at the Department of Energy. And third, the locale and proximity to the cluster. The chips and the high-tech research cluster. That's going to be another fabulous and diversified company, which was on our minds with Genentech, because their economic cycle really has nothing to do with the economic cycle that affects, say, for example, an Intel, because they're doing biopharmaceuticals, fighting the world's worst diseases, you know, and if they make something and you need it, you will find ways, if you can possibly do it, to buy it. It doesn't have the same economic cycle like, you know, adding computers to your company does. So diversity is something we're trying to bring to the state as well. So you've got the photovoltaic solar cells, you've got biopharmaceutical research, and chips, but you also have lots of other things going on, and these things do build on each other. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
Dennis, the Mulva Hill.
Good morning. Dennis Mulva Hill, Washington County. I think everything's been covered.
Questions?
I'm going to leave it right where it's at, and we'll let others come up that...
Senator Burdick.
Unless Senator Burdick wants to say
something. All I want to talk about is biking. I remember when this program went through, and it was presented as a real boon for the county, so I'm a little surprised to hear the implication that you might actually be losing money on these things. And it just makes me wonder why you do them at all.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, we can get you the information on property tax generated versus the totality of local costs, you know, fire departments and everything that share in this. I think the boon is quality jobs, the ability to build a vital and stable local economy, which then starts supporting, schools and other things. We clearly have had in our discussions, we recognize and want to help the state. We feel these help the state. It's part of our motivation. And, of course, the companies and their employees are huge assets in terms of volunteers and participants and responsible voters and things like that. There are a lot of wins. But I think the point here is it's getting more and more difficult to put them together. And I think it's to the benefit of the state that we continue putting these together.
Mr. Chair, to follow up, when you do your calculation, are you calculating in the additional property taxes from residential, high-end homes? I mean, are you factoring in everything or just the spot that the company is sitting on?
Right. Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, I don't recall. I mean, I don't recall at this point in time. We'll get back to you. Eco Northwest, does at our request, and in fact, I think we paid for the economic study on citing Genentech as an example and how much revenues would be generated. I just, from memory, don't recall what those numbers are, and we'd be happy to provide you a copy of that report.
Okay, I'd like to see that. Thank you.
Eco Northwest, talk about a monopoly. We should have them do a study of the economic impact of all the studies that we employ. Eco Northwest, it is a daily. Yes, Senator George.
A couple of years ago, we had a company that we noticed we were paying a lot of money to, and we said it might be smart for the state to buy that company.
Eco Northwest.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Chair, let me just mention, too, that we also are looking long-term. Mr. Mulva Hill reminded me, during the 15 years, we look at that period and we're more willing to cut it closer to the bone than we would to get them here for all those other benefits. After 15 years, then they go on at regular value, which is also when the gain share would stop. So they're connected in that way.
Limited duration.
Right. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much for your time today.
It's always a delight. Former chair of the Revenue Committee, Tom Bryan. Pat Rebella?
Rebella.
And Jack Gisselman.
Good morning, Chair Deckert, Senators. For the record, my name is Jack Esselman of Tonkin Torp. I'm here representing the city of Hillsborough today, and we're submitting to you some written testimony from our mayor, Tom Hughes. He cannot be with us before you today, but I am joined by Pat Rebella, who is a senior project manager at the city, works closely with the strategic investment programs as well as a wealth of other programs and offerings at the city. So with that, I'll turn the mic over to Mr. Rebella, and then we'll be available for your question.
Good morning, Chair Deckert and committee members. My name is Pat Rebellia, senior project manager for the city of Hillsborough. We have just distributed written testimony from Mayor Hughes, and so I won't read the material. I will just sort of summarize what's being said there. The city of Hillsborough supports the concepts in Senate Bill 954 to allocate a percentage of the eligible SIP-related revenues into a shared services fund, that a portion of which will eventually get to the domiciled counties and cities where these projects locate. We believe that enactment of the concepts in the bill will make the SIP program an even stronger economic development program. There's one proposed amendment if the bill is reaches an amendment stage later on, and we would suggest that Section 3 of the bill relating to allocation have language similar to that last paragraph in our testimony, to the effect that monies in the shared services fund would be distributed to all taxing districts contained in the tax code area in which the projects operate. And there's a formula that's in that last sentence in that paragraph that we would suggest as an amendment. Thank you for the opportunity to present the mayor's testimony. We'd be happy to answer questions.
So we asked the county about that, and they just said, trust us, it'll get to all the right places. You'd like to see a statute, though.
This is we believe that this is a very clear and formula that would work.
Makes sense. Questions for the city of Hillsborough? Thank you very much
for
coming down.
Thank you.
Go ahead and get it drafted, just so we have it, the language on distribution of the funds if we move forward. Anyone else? 954. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 954. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 635. Chris, we haven't seen you in a while.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 635 is a fairly straightforward bill. It changes some aspects of the Oregon Production Investment Fund. It increases reimbursements from that fund for single films from $250,000 to $500,000, and for a television series from $30,000 to $50,000. It also increases the total amount of credits that can be certified per year from $1 million to $5 million. And the change regarding reimbursements applies to films starting principal photography on or after January 1, 2007. And the change to the amount of credit certified applies to certifications issued on or after the effective date of the act.
And we have an Echo Northwest study of the economic contributions of the film and video production industry in Oregon accompanies the bill. Howard Levine, do you want to bring up your team, Steve? We sometimes get a movie star on this bill. Howard can be I think he's been in a movie before.
Diane Lane wasn't available.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator, members of the committee. I'm actually going to ask Steve Oster, who's head of the film office, to go first, and then I'll have a very brief comment.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Steve Oster. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Film Office. Just want to walk you through, if I could, what Senate Bill 635 does. Before I do that, just talking about the production incentives in general. As you know, the 2003-2005 legislative sessions, along with the governor, instituted OPIF along with Greenlight Oregon as incentive programs to help reverse what had been a long downslide in production coming into Oregon. You have before you a chart which shows you the effect of those incentive programs in helping to turn that around. Essentially, compared to the year prior to the instigation of the incentives, the production was up 71% once the incentives took place. Through our friends at ACO Northwest, we also have the financial impact of that. Essentially, between the 2 years that the Oregon Production Investment Fund has been in place, encompassing tax credits of $2 million, the return on that was $37 million worth of new production coming into the state, which in turn had an economic impact of around $74 million. What's important to note there, first of all, is that that $2 million investment began to pay dividends back to the state almost immediately with the influx of that new production. That money was spread throughout the state from Astoria to Ashland to Medford to Scotts Valley to Hood River to Portland. And it's also spread amongst multiple sectors of the economy, not just direct production related companies, but also support companies, hotels, rental cars, restaurants, caterers, lumber companies. The ECHO Northwest study also showed that with that influx of production, basically the $2 million in tax credits returned to the state $2.3 million in additional tax revenue. So it's got a net gain as opposed to a loss in terms of what those tax credits bring. Since the time that the OPIF was originally instituted, the landscape of production incentives has changed drastically. Just within the last year, seven states have either drastically changed and or brought onto the table new production incentives. Our neighbors to the north, Washington being one of those, instituted a 20% rebate for a production incentive that just took place this year. You see a chart there that shows you what some of the other states are doing, ranging from...
Steve, where's the chart at?
It should be on your briefing right there, bottom of the page. You see there what some of these other states are doing, ranging from 15%, 20%, 25%, 30%, and what their per project caps are, which are radically different than what Oregon has to offer. What that has begun to do, particularly over this last year for us, is taking a lot of the wind out of our sails. So what SB 635 does is puts the gas back into the engine so that we can keep the momentum going. In essence, and this encapsulation includes the revision 635-2 revision. It basically addresses four issues. One is it raises our percentage for goods and services, which is currently at 10% to 20%. We leave payroll where it is at 10% because it goes in tandem with the Greenlight Oregon labor rebate for an effective rebate of 16.2%. It removes the per cap or per project cap, which is currently at $250,000 per project. As noted in the chart on your previous page, that's pretty much small change compared to what some of these companies are being offered. And because the incentive is tied to their spend, in essence, there is a cap inherent based on how much they're spending in the state of Oregon. The third thing that it does is it lowers the minimum spend from $1 million as it currently stands to $750,000. This allows us to, $750,000. What that allows us to do is capture more of our independent, indigenous industry who have not been able to participate in the incentives because of that required $1 million spend. Some of them have had to go elsewhere with their projects. And the last thing that this does is raise the amount of tax credits that are permitted to be sold for this from the current $1 million to $5 million per fiscal. Both of the first 2 years with OPIF, we basically ran out of funds available to commit to production companies within the first 3 months, leaving us with 9 months of the year where we were having to say, we'd love to have you, but we don't have anything to offer to you. So we had a lot of business that we would have loved to have brought in that we were unable to do so. Also included there in your packet is letters of support. First one is from Bill Bowling at Warner Brothers. He's the head of their location filming department. He's a native Oregonian. Would love to bring projects here, but also has to justify that to his bosses based on what's being offered. Jim Wilson from TIG Productions. He's the co-partner with Kevin Costner. They were here with Postman, as you may remember, and would love to bring another project. They had one last year that they would like to have brought into the state. Excuse me, it actually takes place in Oregon, but they had to take it to Louisiana because the incentives were better. So the film still takes place in Oregon, but it's being shot in Shreveport. The next one there is from Gina Matthews, also a native Oregonian, has a production deal at 20th Century Fox. Also would love to bring projects here, but again has to answer to her production executives who look at the bottom line. Don Rohrbacher at DDC Griffin Electric, who is a local production services company, would love to have been here this morning, but he's actually with the group from Untraceable, the film that's shooting with Diane Lane. He has the largest production rental package in the history of Oregon being rented to that company, so he's busy with them this morning. City Lumber up in Astoria, who's also benefited from several of the productions that have come through. Fluid Images in Salem, Sisters, who has camera cranes that they rent. Also would love to have been here, but unfortunately we're working. Well, fortunately for them, unfortunately for us, we're working. And the last one is BLT, Bruce Lawson Production Services. He has included a photo of the new equipment that they've been able to buy due to the resurgence of work that they've experienced in the last 2 years. So that also points out how this influx in production also helps us to rebuild our infrastructure. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Steve. Questions for our director of the Office of Film and Video in Oregon?
Thank you, Chair.
Senator Burton.
If we go for this, then we all get cameos in the next movie, is that correct? And no bridges will be closed in Portland, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, I'll certainly do my best to get you the cameo.
Mr. Chair, I did have a serious question here. Actually, that was serious, but on the you show a return in state revenue of $2.3 million for the $2 million invested.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a point of diminishing return, according to Eco Northwest, I'm sure? Or do what would happen to that ratio as you put more money into it, do you think?
Well, the calculation from Eco Northwest is based on each $1 million of new production mm-hmm. that's brought into the state. So it's calculated off of that. So in essence, if you increase the fund and increase the amount of production that's coming in, that return should increase at the same ratio as well.
And then the one that really stands out on your chart is New Mexico, which mm-hmm. has no cap on anything.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of impact has it had in New Mexico? Do you have information on that?
I don't have a Mr. Chair, Senator Burke, I don't have a financial number for that, but I can tell you that it has had a dramatic impact in the economy there. 8 sound stages were just built in Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing about $300 million of business per year. Arizona next door has noted that lots of folks from California are flying over their state to get to New Mexico, and they've just instituted a incentive program as well. So it's had a dramatic effect, you know, and being a industry which is clean for New Mexico, it's been a very positive boon to their economy.
Thank you.
Steve, I guess the natural criticism that you're going to have, or I've heard, is that the money gets exhausted. The tax credit is usually exhausted. That's my understanding. Early in the $1 million that you have, it's exhausted early on, and yet films continue to come throughout the year after you have no more tax credits available to your office, which might lead one to at least ponder they're still coming. And the tax credit is exhausted in April.
Mr. Chairman, actually, they're still coming, but those were, for example, Untraceable would be one of those. That's a commitment that we made prior to the exhaustion of the fund. So those deals are typically made 4 to 6 months before the show actually shows up here in the state. So it's more a process, if you will, of that 9 months of not having something to offer. You won't see the effect of that until 6 months later. So productions other than, excuse me, those that are small enough not to count under the incentive are going elsewhere. We had several of them, actually. One from the makers of Crash, once that won the Academy Award, they basically had six projects that got greenlit, and they were looking to bring one here, and their first question was, what do you have in terms of incentives? So while the perception is that work is continuing to come, that work that's continuing to come is work that was negotiated with the incentives when we had them at the time.
And you do get projects that simply you believe, or they're big enough that this is not a program for them because either they're big enough or you've made the with whoever your team is the calculation that they don't need any assistance. They're going to come here anyways, or is that not the case where there's not projects that you believe in? I'm thinking of one that was just here last fall. I believe last fall. In my neighborhood, Sean Penn's
Into the Wild
film.
Right. That's an example of one that actually at the time that they came, Mr. Chairman, that we actually didn't have any OPIF. They shot less of that film here than they would have liked to because they needed to, and then those sections shot in Utah because there were some incentives available. But yes, that's a rare project where they were following a book and were trying to stay very direct. excuse me, direct to the locations that were in that book. So wherever they could, they did. They did participate in the labor rebate. I think we would have lost more of the film to other locations had we not had something to put on the plate. We did about $2.5 million of business on what was almost a $70 million project. So we would have liked to have had a bigger piece of that pie, and I think we would have had a larger slice had we had something else to offer them.
Hmm. And I think I've asked you this before, but just track. This is a unique in terms of we haven't had a lot of tax credits. We've actually held off. This committee has who has jurisdiction over tax credits. We've held off to this point, but this is a unique one in that it deals with expenditures, which is great, which means they don't come and start spending money and nothing happens until they set up and you see the activity. But the uniqueness is trying to account for expenditures that are unlike a capital expenditure, a building that you can say, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
These are, I would think, receipts that one has to just accumulate from cars to hotels to meals. What is the mechanics of that accounting so when they come back and say, we just spent in Astoria $3 million, what are the actual mechanics of, okay, yeah, you were staying at the Hotel Elliott for 3 weeks?
Mr. Chairman, they provide to us basically all of their production accounting, which studios require that as well, a very comprehensive lists and receipts. We also ask for the the check as well, so that we know that these people have been paid. Not only has the money been spent, but the vendors have been paid before we turn around with any incentives. My role previously when I was at Paramount was as a line producer. So it's documentation that I'm very used to looking at. Part of my job was to make sure that money was being spent where department heads told us it was being spent. So my role here as well in looking at this paperwork is basically the same. But we get a full breakdown from their accounting department. It usually takes them 4 to 6 weeks after they finish production to give us their final accounting for us to take a look at.
And then the books come to you, and you open them up and start to take a look.
Sure. It's actually not books. It's boxes.
Boxes.
Literally boxes of documentation comes into the office.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
When these really high-paid actors come and work in Oregon, do they pay the Oregon income? Is part of this gain in state revenue from the actual actors' salaries?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, generally not. Most of the folks who are paid anything above $200,000 are paid on what's called a loan-out company. So typically it's paid to, you know, Little Moon Productions, which is typically a California company, for the services of that actor. So those don't count under our incentive program at all. It's not an Oregon company and therefore not included. We also have in our administrative rules any individual, whether that's an actor or director or anyone else who's paid via payroll, which is the only thing that our incentives are applicable to. If they're paid more than $1 million, then the total of their compensation is not included as well, so that we've built into the administrative rules safeguards so that we're not underwriting, you know, Tom Cruise's salary on a project. Typically that would not happen anyway. They won't be on payroll. There'll be a loan out company that is typically a, like I say, a company that is not an Oregon-based company, and therefore it's not included as is.
So the $2.3 million includes the people who work on the crew, and I'm just trying to figure out where this figure comes from.
The $2.3 million return? Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, the Echo Northwest study, what they calculate that on is the income taxes that come back in, not just from the, because there's a portion of them, while we rebate through green light labor, the crew withholding, there's a portion of that above the 6.2% that's often withheld and that those folks owe to the state, which is an income for the state. But then it's also to the indirect. It's to the employees of the lumber company. It's to the employees of the catering company. It's to the employees of the hotel who, because of the increased business, the additional payroll that those folks are able to then carry or keep within their fold, that would then turn around as income tax to the state. So that's what that's calculated on.
Okay. Howard Levine.
Chairman Deckard, members of the committee, my name is Howard Levine. I'm the governor's policy advisor for the film office. One quick thing. I don't know if you have in front of you copies of short dash two amendments that we also drafted. If not, I apologize, and we'll get you copies of them. The one thing to note from these amendments are that we are not doing this $500,000 cap on what individual films can take from OPIF. Basically, it's going to be up to the film office to determine, what should be the upper limit instead of the $250,000, because that will enable them to attract probably larger films and bigger films, because some of these major films are not going to want to limit themselves to $250,000 or $500,000 under SB 635. But that will not change the impact on the state, because the $5 million cap on the tax credit stays the same, so we're still working within that same cap. We're just
allowing some more flexibility for the film office in terms of what each film can take from OPIF, if that makes sense. And the other one other change in the Dash 2 amendments Steve actually made mention of, and that is changing the $1 million to $750,000. Chairman Decker, members of the committee, I'm here primarily to emphasize the governor's strong support for Senate Bill 635. This is the third bill since 2003 that the governor has put forward to strengthen the film and television industry in Oregon. There was the original OPIF legislation, then in 2005 he proposed and the legislature approved Greenlight Oregon, which rebates 6.2% of a production company's labor expenses for films that spend at least $1 million in Oregon. And now, based on the very strong track record of OPIF, which Steve has alluded to, the governor is proposing that we raise the cap on the tax credit to from $1 million to $5 million. He strongly believes OPIF is a proven winner for Oregon. In combination with Greenlight Oregon, it has attracted millions of dollars in production to our state. This is money that goes to Oregon businesses, workers, and the state treasury. Film and television is also a clean industry. It pays good wages, sends images of Oregon around the world while attracting new tourists to Oregon. Production companies want to shoot here. We have great locations here. But as Steve explained, there's a lot of competition for this business. The original OPIF revitalized a business that had fallen sharply in Oregon. But to keep us a major player, we need to attract larger productions, and we need a larger pool of funds. So I urge you to support Senate Bill 635. Thank you.
Great. Questions, Senator George?
Do you believe, when you look at the Pacific Northwest piece and you look at no caps or $40 million, do you believe that we are possibly, even at $5 million, depriving Oregon citizens from an opportunity to participate in this industry by having even that low a cap, which appears today to be pretty low compared to some of them out there?
Well, if you take the OPIF $5 million, combine it with the Greenlight Oregon 6.2%, plus the way we've drafted the Dash 2 amendments, basically film companies will be getting 16%, 10% plus the 6.2% on labor, and 20% on services. And my understanding, and I think Steve can probably address this better than I can, this is going to put us not number one on the list, but probably third or fourth best state for this industry, for this type of business. I don't know if you want to add to that, Steve.
Senator George, to answer your question, is it possible we're still going to be tapped out? Mm-hmm. It's a possibility. We felt this was a fair way to take a look, just as the initial incentive was set at $1 million. Let's see how it goes. Let's see what happens. Let's see if it works. We felt that $5 million, hey, we'd love to have more, but we felt this was a good number to say, okay, let's see what happens when we do this. So that, because I think what none of us want to do, including our office, is get into a situation where we have negative returns. And I think we need to see how this goes. We also, have to be careful about not inviting more business than our infrastructure can handle, so that we don't create a negative reputation for the state. So trying to keep weigh all of those things, we came up with this number.
And Senator, we also need to weigh the fact that we need to sell the tax credit as well. So the $1 million sold very easily. We expect that the $5 million will also be able to sell, but there probably is some upper limit as to what the office can reasonably expect to sell as well.
And that is an emerging issue of being able to market the tax credits. So we're going to discuss that here in a week or two. I don't know if I believe you've had that issue, many with the cultural trust and the Betsy tax
right.
credit and the business energy.
I'm sort of on the periphery of it, but I do know that there are discussions with DOR and the governor's office in terms of putting a proposal together that will essentially protect the Oregon Cultural Trust, the Film Office, Betsy, most of these tax credits, and do it in an equitable way.
Yep, we are. It's coming to us here in about 2 weeks. So that's just a preview of coming attractions. I don't know if other folks have heard about this issue of actually selling the tax credits. It's been a real issue.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, if I may also introduce for
Please.
You Eric Salmonson, who is a transportation driver captain, who will discuss and share with you what the incentives have made, what kind of an impact they've made for him as an Oregonian to not have to go out of state to find work.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Eric Salmonson, and I support this because it really will make a big impact on me and the, you know, hundreds of local crew members that I work with and know. So thank you for the opportunity to be here. As Steve said, I work as the transportation captain in the motion picture industry. A simple description of my job is that I oversee a crew of drivers ranging in number from 15 to 60 people, depending on the size of the project and the needs of the vehicles that the company requires. These vehicles include all the cars and vans that are used to transport the cast and crew, the equipment trucks that haul the gear, the trailers that the crew use for hair, makeup, wardrobe, offices, and the trailers that the actors use as a comfortable place to be when their presence isn't required on set. Another aspect of my job is procuring and prepping various vehicles in front of the camera. So if the director wants a particular character to be driving a 1976 Gremlin with purple racing stripes, it's my job to find it and get it ready to shoot. So it also involves a great deal of logistics because it can be difficult to park our semi-trucks in a location that will not be seen on the film, but it's still close enough to access the equipment safely and efficiently without negatively impacting neighbors and local businesses. I grew up on a farm in Yamhill County, Senator George knows, right down the road. But I now live in Portland. I have been working in the transportation department since 1992. And so over the last 15 years, I've seen film in Oregon sort of ebb and flow. I live in Oregon because I like it here, and I like it even more when I can work in the state where I want to live. I believe that having a state production incentive plan that's attractive to production companies will undoubtedly increase the amount of work and money that comes to Oregon. I've had to work out of state numerous times over the years because there simply was not enough film work in Oregon. And I have seen the influx of production work in states that have attractive incentive programs. I have friends that have moved all over the state or all over the country to New Mexico, Louisiana, just because there's enough work present that they're able to earn a comfortable living. So it pleases me that the last couple of years, I've seen more production work come to Oregon. And when more work gets done here, I also see the crew base grow, getting qualified technicians, and I see the crew members purchasing industry-specific equipment to strengthen the production infrastructure. Personally, I've invested in trucks, trailers, and generators, which in turn makes it easier for a production company to film here because it's not necessary to bring in all the equipment from out of state. Many of my drivers own studio trucks that, again, strengthen the local infrastructure while generating more income. I see crew members from all the other departments like camera, grip, electric, props. Just in the last 2 years, they've been investing in more industry-specific equipment to lease back to the production company. I see this as an extremely positive strategy which benefits the crew, the vendors, production companies, and the state. This is a profession that I enjoy immensely and one which I hope to continue in Oregon, my home. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for coming to the Capitol today.
Yeah. Got me out of getting up at 5 in the morning to go to work.
We can schedule it again tomorrow if that's helpful for you. Great. Any questions?
Just to let you know that Eric and Larry George were the little brothers of two older dynamic sisters, so they did very well with the tutorship of the older sisters.
Yeah.
Good to see you again.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks.
And British Columbia is no longer, the first time we had this program up, it was all about British Columbia, but we don't hear so much about Vancouver.
Right. Since the exchange rates are not as favorable as they once were, British Columbia is still doing business, but their business has fallen off by about half.
Okay.
And it's the U.S. states who have picked up a lot of that slack.
Hmm. Interesting. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Close public hearing on Senate Bill 635. We do have one more bill. No one's signed up, so it'll be a really quick one. Jack, do you want to come talk really briefly about a concept we're somewhat familiar with? Open public hearing on Senate Bill 582. And Paul, do you want to give us an ICA Northwest study of...
yeah. Sounds like you think we need some competition. Senate Bill 582, the committee has heard, and we are currently now waiting on amendments that Senator Morse has requested. One of the issues that came up was the language in the original 582 changed the credit from 60% to 100%, and that has been restored back to the original 60% credit. So we would not anticipate any revenue change as a result of if the amendment comes in. So it would essentially be the same as Senate Bill 853 from last session.
Okay, and we're still waiting for the amendment.
That's correct.
Okay, Jack. Well, that should, I don't know if there's anything to add.
There's
a long wait for this amendment.
Yeah, that's all right. We're just, for the record, Jack Esselman, Tonkin Torp for the Software Association of Oregon. Senate Bill 853, as you know, Mr. Chair and Senators, was a bill we worked on closely with Senator Morse last session. The bill has not been able to be implemented, as this committee's heard, because of administrative needs of the Department of Revenue and the Oregon State Treasury. This measure fixes that, and I think you have some -2 amendments, as Mr. Warner said, coming before the committee, hopefully sooner rather than later, and look forward to getting this bill out of committee and through the process.
Great. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Close public hearing on Senate Bill 582. We are adjourned until tomorrow at 8:45.